settle down now and get comfy. You're about to sleep with a celebrity. Let your weary mind be free. And someone kind of famous who you can't see. It's time for sleeping with celebrity.
Hello, sleepyheads, and welcome to Sleeping with Celebrities. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Tonight is going to be challenging for me, dear listener, because the Maximum Fun Drive is taking place right now. Sleeping with Celebrities, like all shows on the network, is listener-supported. If you'd like to help me continue to make this program, now is a perfect time to do so, before you fall asleep, by becoming a member at MaximumFun.org/join. It's the best time of year to show your support, and there are lots of perks that I'll tell you about later in the show. But now, there's a McElroy brother I should tell you about. And boy, did he bring his Z game. So take a deep breath, lie down, or lean back, it's up to you. Take this moment to get comfy while I introduce Justin McElroy. Justin is one of the titular brothers in the podcast My Brother, and Me. He's also the co-host of the Sawbones podcast and one of the co-hosts of the Adventure Zone podcast, all of those found here on Maximum Fun. Before we start, I was wondering what kind of pillow you use, what kind of pillow configuration, number of pillows, fluffiness.
I wish that we had decided to just talk about this for an hour because I spent a lifelong journey really looking through pillows because I have what the doctors call a big head. So a lot of support back there is important. So I had two pillows for a long time because I couldn't find one that just worked. And I tried, really everything, bamboo and down and everything. And I finally found one called the Pillow Cube, and it is a cube-shaped pillow. Mm. It is just the support that I need for my head. It's the first time in my life I'm sleeping with one pillow. So I'm happier on the pillow front than I've ever been. I feel like I finally got to the end of that. So thrilling.
Well, it's congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
A pillow cube. We've communicated through emails leading up to this and in conversations, and you've indicated that something that you care a lot about is the process of going to the Disney theme parks and preferred ways to work the ticketing system to get the most out of your abilities. Why is this of such interest to you?
Well, I've always been someone who enjoyed the Disney parks, but it wasn't until I had kids of my own and we were about to have our second child and we hadn't done Disney World with our first one yet. And we thought, you know, it's going to be a long time after this one is born to the second one is born before we're able to do something like that. So let's kind of it was almost a spur of the moment, you know, long weekend. We have a flight out of Huntington that goes direct to Orlando on one of those unnerving airlines. You know what I mean?
Smaller so cheap airline.
Small planes. Doesn't bother me, but I know if you're a motion sick kind of person. But so we flew down there, and it was just honestly, it was a mess. I mean, it was a mess. I was completely unprepared for what I found, and I just left that experience thinking I can do this better. I know I can do this better.
How long was the flight?
It's not too bad. Maybe, I want to say 2 hours. When we travel for shows and what have you, I don't really fly out of Huntington much because it's a very small airport.
Yeah.
And if you miss your flight, it's one of those where, you know, that's the flight to Huntington for the day.
Yeah. So you fly into Orlando from the Huntington Airport in West Virginia.
Yeah. From Huntington to Orlando. Yeah. There's two Orlando airports. There's Sanford, which is about an hour out.
Uh-huh.
And then there's MCO, which is, you know, the main Orlando airport. Actually, interesting. Orlando didn't have an airport of any significance when Disney World opened there in 1971.
Really?
So most of the flights were smaller. They had what were called stall ports, which were short takeoff and landing vehicles that would designed for short flights. And a lot of people thought it was going to be the future of commuter travel were these, you know, short flights, right? So you'd go like Orlando to Tallahassee or whatever. You'd fly into one of the bigger ones and take one of these small flights in. But that got to be unsustainable as the crowds grew. And eventually what Orlando found was this, they had a decommissioned Air Force base there called McCoy Air Force Base. And that is what they used as the basis. That was the what they converted into the Orlando airport. And that's why if you ever fly into Orlando and you see the airport code is MCO, that's why it's called that, because it's McCoy, because it was initially McCoy Air Force Base. MCO was the distinction before it was the Orlando airport, and it just stuck.
What's the airport designation for Huntington?
HTS, Huntington Tri-State.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You flew in to MCO, to the Orlando airport.
Well, the first time, flew into Sanford.
Oh.
We did not know there were two airports. We thought there was just the one.
Oh.
So we frantically started trying to find someone who would drive us.
It's like Dulles and National.
Exactly. Yes, exactly like that.
How did you get in?
We ended up, I think, they had a shuttle service. So it worked out okay. Where I shot myself in the foot with this first Disney trip was I did not plan ahead. I didn't start early enough.
Mm.
It's really something you have to start ideally a year out, 6 months, I mean, at the most.
Why does it take so much planning?
Well, first off, the spaces at the resorts tend to fill up. There are certain rooms that are more choice than other rooms. There are certain hotels that are, they call deluxe resorts, that are really the pricey ones. There are like value ones like Art of Animation or things like that. They're a lot less expensive, but if you're not planning on spending a lot of time in the hotel room, maybe that's not a big deal.
Mm.
But those really you have to book early if you want. Like there's some that have better view of the fireworks every night from Magic Kingdom.
I see.
You want to book early enough to get the places you want. And the 6 months used to be when you could make dining reservations. They've now changed that to 60 days throughout the resort.
Oh, I see. Presumably your subsequent trip or trips went better?
Yes. We eventually joined the sort of like Disney timeshare, which they call the Disney Vacation Club.
Oh.
With some other friends.
Tell me more about the Disney Vacation Club.
You basically are buying a very small portion of the Disney World Resort, and you get basically points that you can use to book certain rooms in the resort itself. They have fewer amenities, like not cleaned as often and things like that.
Hmm.
But they are, you know, you can use points for them. It's like a typical thing where if you don't use the points every year, you can bank them, or, you know, you don't want to let those expire. People sell points and loan points to other people, that kind of deal.
Does it limit when you can go to Disney?
Well, this is actually kind of plays into the earliness of the planning.
Mm.
There are windows at Disney World that are more crowded than others typically.
Oh.
The busiest days are holidays, actually. Christmas is the busiest day at Disney World. I've never really understood wanting to spend Christmas Day at the park, but I can understand if maybe it started to be a tradition for you early on and it's one you stuck with.
Mm.
But that's the busiest day. So if you're trying to book around that time of year, also summer is a big one. Spring breaks are obviously really, really hard.
Big crowds.
It's been harder since the pandemic because of where the park was shut down for so long, for a while, and crowds were limited. I think there was like people who had been putting off trips, you know, trying to go at different times. So the crowd calendars were a little screwy right now, but they're still, you know, you can usually do pretty well in like late August, early September, most of September, when school's back in session, if you can make that work. January, February, the early spring months are usually pretty good windows, but you use more points on your room if you book during those busy times of year. So if you book around Easter or Christmas, when rooms are really in demand, you're going to spend more points for those.
Sure, sure. How many points do you get?
There's like a price that you, so you buy a certain number of points and then you use those points. You buy, you know, you accumulate points and then you can, those renew automatically every year. But once you own the points, you know, you can use them once a year. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a relaxing vacation. Certainly not for me, maybe for other people in my family. But I enjoy the satisfaction I get from planning a trip well.
So is it more of an adventure vacation than a calming, get your wits together kind of thing?
Yeah, except I want to limit the adventure as much as humanly possible. I want to keep it completely in my control.
Tell me more about that.
Well, the dining reservations are a good example. There's lots of restaurants at Disney World, and they vary from table service, which are your more upscale restaurants like Be Our Guest over at the Beast's Castle.
Yeah.
And then there's a few at Epcot in the World Pavilion, like Le Cellier, which is a steakhouse. And there's one 5-star restaurant in the park called Victoria and Albert's over at the Grand Floridian. Those are a little more upscale. And if you want to eat in the park, you really need to plan ahead of time. So you could go and say, you know, I'm just going to see where I can get a table. But I don't like to leave things to chance like that, especially when you're traveling with little kids. They can't exactly just kind of chill, you know, and go with the flow. They're bad at that. They want to eat chicken nuggets when they want to eat chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
So having the things planned that I know will go according to plan is very comforting to me. I get a great deal of satisfaction from that.
And how old are your kids?
They're 4 and 8.
How important is it to have the sit-down reservations at a restaurant?
I would go so far as to say they would prefer one of the like walk up and get the Cosmic Rays, Starlight Cafe, that kind of vibe where it's like, you know, you just walk up to the counter and order what you want. The nice thing about the dinner reservations or dining reservations for us is that it gives a window where we know we're going to be sitting down, taking a break,
I see,
letting the kids rest a little bit. So that, for me, the heat can get really overbearing, or the rain, if that's a factor. So having some times where you know you're going to be indoors and seated and have access to, you know, water and things like that is nice to have. We don't always use those reservations. Sometimes we get caught up with other things. But I like knowing that they are there.
You mentioned going to the Be Our Guest Cafe, which I think is a reference to the movie Beauty and the Beast.
You must be a Disney nut.
Well, I've seen that movie. I have...
You remember the Beast from it.
Yeah. I have kids of my own, and I'm a former kid.
Me too, actually.
I wonder, you know, there's several characters in that film that have been transformed into other things. There's someone has been turned into a clock. Someone has been turned into a candlestick. There's a mother and son who've been turned into a teapot and cup.
John, if you're about to ask about the toilet, I'd rather not discuss.
No.
Okay.
Hello, sleepyheads. As I mentioned earlier, before we started the show, this is the Maximum Fun Drive that we are going through right now. If you're still awake, I would like to ask you to support this show, Sleeping with Celebrities. I want to personally ask you for your support. We're going to get right back into the show in just a few moments, but now is the time to go to maximumfun.org/join. Senior producer and editor Laura Swisher is here. And Laura, welcome. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, John. It's very exciting to be back.
Restrain yourself, because we do have a job here to do, and it's a tricky job. We have to get people to act now and become members of Sleeping with Celebrities, but then also to relax and get ready for sleep. It's a tight wire that we have to very softly walk in slippers.
Actually, John, I'm wearing UGG boots. I would say, in terms of the tightrope, all you have to do is explain to people why now is the best time of year to support the shows. John, why don't you tell people what they can get at our starter level, which is $5 a month.
At the $5 a month level, you have access to Sleeping with Celebrities bonus content, an episode that is available only to members of the show. It is called A Snowy Spring Nature Walk, and you join me as I traipse around through the snows of Minnesota and share with you some nature facts about what I'm observing. Nature facts that, whether they're true or not, you don't need to worry about it, but it might make you sleepy, and that's what's good. But we can offer more than just a show, more than bonus content, more than a narrated walk through a snowy springtime in Minnesota.
At the $10 a month level, they're going to get the nature walk from you, as well as any of the other bonus content, and they also will be able to have a sticker. There are 37 Maximum Fun stickers, one for each show, designed by Tom Deja. And the sticker for Sleeping with Celebrities is someone falling asleep on a cloud, and there's a crescent moon kind of cradling the cloud, and it's quite lovely. And the great thing about these stickers is that they're restickable. So maybe one day you feel like sticking the Sleeping with Celebrity sticker on a phone, and then you're like, I kind of want it on my laptop. Guess what? You can go ahead and do that. Okay, at the $20 a month level, you can choose between the Max Fun Culinary Kit or a lovely embroidered rocket hat.
What's in the kit?
It comes with a 2023 Max Fun Cookbook designed by Tom Deja, featuring all new recipes thoughtfully submitted by your favorite Max Fun chefs.
You know, I have a recipe in that cookbook.
Oh, okay. Tell me about yours.
Well, you know, Laura, I live in the Upper Midwest, and I thought it would be good to offer what we in the Upper Midwest sometimes refer to as a salad. My particular salad is made with Cool Whip and marshmallows and pistachio pudding mix and crushed pineapple. And my wife and I, when we've been making this for over 20 years, we've been making this dish, we've referred to it as marshmallow crappy. And so when we go over to a friend's house in a potluck kind of situation, as is often the case in the Upper Midwest, we are often called upon. When invited? Well, we're inviting you to the potluck, and will you bring marshmallow crappie? And we always say, yes, of course, we will bring the marshmallow crappie. And this is a recipe on how to make marshmallow crappie. It could not be simpler. It goes container by container, and you dump everything into a big bowl and stir.
So yeah, that sounds amazing. So you can get the crappy salad and, you know, lots of other stuff. I haven't even had a chance to go through them all. But in addition to that, you'll get a special jar of spices. So that's really cool. Well, guess what? We're going to continue on with this culinary theme. For $35 a month, you can get the Maximum
Yum apron for all your cooking purposes.
It's super cute.
You can find a level that works for you. Find a gift that works for you. We have so much to offer. Restickable stickers, bonus content of a walk in the snow. We have the Maximum Yum apron, the Max Fun Family Cookbook, the jar of spices created just for Maximum Fun listeners.
To see all the different levels, just head to MaximumFun.org/join and... let me duck out, John, and let you go back to the show.
And now, back to Justin McElroy. I was just about to ask him which of the characters in Beauty and the Beast he related to the most. Here's what Justin had to say.
Gosh, I think I like Cogsworth.
The clock.
Yeah, he's kind of a warrior, likes to keep everything on schedule, which, I mean, we've established is pretty much my MO over here. So
okay.
I think probably Cogsworth. Cogsworth is also not willing to upset the beast, even if it means him being permanently in prison as a clock. That's how far he'll go to avoid an awkward conversation. And I definitely can relate to.
Mm. What do you like to eat at the dining experiences?
Oh, boy. There's so many wonderful meals. We went to secure a table at Be Our Guest once, and part of the dessert is that they bring you the gray stuff.
What's gray stuff?
You know, in the song, try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes.
Is it yogurt?
I would call it sort of a cookies and cream mousse. It's like a cookies and cream mousse, yeah.
Oh.
That is how I would describe the gray stuff.
Okay. Do you ever do the thing where you make ice cream soup?
Oh, boy, I used to love that. That was one of my favorite episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse. Is his snack of the day was he made ice cream soup. It may have been the first one, actually. I remember Randy ended up ruining it by putting too much chocolate syrup in it.
Wow.
That is my preferred method of eating ice cream when I have to.
Yeah.
If I'm going to eat ice cream, I care a lot less about the cream itself than the bits.
Mm.
I can't eat an ice cream without bits. I feel like bits ice cream without bits is kind of wasted. So I like with ice cream soup, it almost becomes more of an ice cream stew when you have the bits, because then it's a little bit, you know, chunkier. I dig that. You can't beat, though, the bite when you have a drumstick, the cone that has the chocolate in the bottom, and then you eat the whole cone, and then the cone has a little bit of the chocolate at the bottom. And I said one time that they should just sell the cone bottoms, and it turns out that somebody was doing that, where you could just buy a bag full of cone bottoms filled with chocolate.
Mm. When I was younger, my parents would sometimes buy ice milk.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Well, according to my sister's 2.5 years older than me, and her name's Elizabeth, she said, well, there are two steps. You have to chop it with your spoon and make sure to get all the way to the bottom of the bowl on your chops. And it's almost like you're trying to aerate the thing. The intention of that is to loosen it, said Elizabeth. We sometimes called her Lisbeth. We still do, but her name's Elizabeth. It's spelled with an S. And once it's sufficiently chopped, that's when the stirring begins. Because if you try to do it before then, you're going to be rotating the product within the bowl.
Yeah. My kids, like when it snows, get big bowls of snow and then add sweeteners to it to make a sort of ice, you know, like a snow cream, they call it.
Oh.
So sometimes we'll have a big bowl of snow and then we'll have, add some coffee creamer. That's good. Some, like, you know, if I have like a pumpkin coffee creamer, we have snow cone syrups on hand. So sometimes we'll do like a snow cone. And sometimes I'll think to myself, wow, you've really given them a huge bowl full of snow. And I think, oh, you guys don't need that much snow. And then I have to remind myself, it's water. It is just water. It's water.
Yeah. Do they have a variety of flavored coffee creamers at Walt Disney World in Orlando?
So most of the parks do have a Starbucks in them now.
Okay.
So most of the Starbucks. The other line that they do business with is called Joffrey's. They also have coffee stands. I've never been clear if Joffrey's is owned by Disney World or if it's just a company that they work with, but they have a variety of creamers throughout the year, you know, some seasonal ones. I'm sure there's a pumpkin offering right now, things like that.
Right.
If I could talk about the ride reservation system at length.
I would like to hear about the ride reservation system.
Okay, good. So there used to be a system called, as we all know, when the park started, they had lettered tickets, A, B, C, D, and E ticket was the best. And the different tickets would cost different amounts of money. And that was how, when the park opened, that's how it worked. So you'd pay more to ride the better rides. And that system has been modified many times over the years. And the current system, which is replacing the Fast Pass system previously, is called Lightning Lanes. And the way Lightning Lanes work is that there's a system, another system that's sort of adjacent to Lightning Lanes called Genie Plus. And Genie is a service that you can use on your Disney app that will make suggestions as to what rides would be ideal for you to go to right now. Things like the lines are unusually short at this time of day. This might be worth going to. So if you get the Genie Plus the pack, which I think is $14.99 per day, you used to be able to buy it in advance, but now you have to buy it on the day of, you can make reservations for one ride at a time in a certain time window. So you come back between 10 and 10:15, and we will let you into this very short line, and you'll basically, you know, get right onto the ride.
So do you use these two systems in concert with one another so you can see where the line is shorter and then make a reservation to make it shorter still?
Yes, right. So you would make the reservation ahead of time, so there would not be a line. The recommendations are more when you don't already have a reservation, here's something that might be good for you to try. And then there are certain really new rides where there's what's called a virtual queue. And that is at 7 a.m. and 1 p.m. during the day, they will open up a virtual line, which you'll join on your phone. And that will give you a boarding group. And when your boarding group is called, that's when you return to the ride. That's for things like Guardians of the Galaxy, Cosmic Rewind, and formerly Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. They're really high interest rides to keep people from waiting 4 hours. They do these virtual boarding groups.
Okay. Like with Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then you can also pay an additional charge for certain rides called individual lightning lanes, and those you pay to get a spot on and skip the line. There used to be more rides like that, and now I think there's just a handful. There's an Avatar ride that people are just gaga for over in the Animal Kingdom, and that one, Flight of Passage, it's called. That one fills up pretty quick, so I think that's when you can pay to ride. And the Guardians ride, of course, is a premium ride right now.
When you're standing in one of the lines, because I think even these shorter lines or these lightning lanes, as you describe them, probably still involve some standing in a line.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, you know, mainly it's trying to keep my kids entertained by pointing to things in their room and saying, look at that, or look at that. And I say, look at that thing. So that's a way to kill a little time. There are also on the Disney Play app, which is sort of a companion app for the parks, in addition to the official companion app for the parks, you can play little games while you're waiting in lines. It's geolocating, so it sees what ride you're waiting for, and it'll ask you some trivia about that ride, or let you compete in a trivia contest. I know Soarin' does this, which is like replicating flight with a big screen and moving seats. Soarin' does this where they'll put you into a trivia contest against other people in line, and your team tries to beat the other teams in trivia while you're waiting. That's fun.
I imagine that gets emotional sometimes.
It does. I mean, if you've been in a line long enough, you just really, really need a win. And, you know, that could be the bump you need to just keep you moving on.
How long is a day at the park with your children?
With my children, it is typically starting as early as I can get people moving. There are many ways you can get to the parks from the hotels. There are some on the monorail line, the Contemporary, the Polynesian, and the Grand Floridian are all on the monorail line. So you can ride the monorail directly to the Magic Kingdom there. So that makes the morning start a little earlier, maybe around like 9 or so. Mm-hmm. We do not typically close the park out. They just can't hang with it.
It's a long
day. So I would say typically, you know, 10 to 6 for us, so is usually about does it.
For people who don't know, the first popular monorail to be built in the United States was built for the 1962 World's Fair in Seattle.
Hmm.
And it is still operational today. It goes from downtown Seattle to a neighborhood called the Seattle Center, which is away from downtown. I'm from the Seattle area, but this was built before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smooth ride, isn't it, Justin?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's nice. It's sort of an iconic image to see the monorail glide around the parks. They've recently opened something called the Skyliner, which is sort of like you... not unlike a chairlift, I think. There are words for these, but it's like the chains where they have like little carts hanging down, like hanging on a suspended line, and then the line travels in a circle around the park. And you can take a Skyliner to some of the resorts. And that's a relatively new thing past few years. You know, you mentioned the World's Fair. It got me thinking about the Carousel of Progress, which is a really fascinating ride. It is the only ride at Walt Disney World that Walt himself was actually involved with creating, because the original show was created for the 1964 World's Fair, a couple years after the 62 World's Fair, as you can probably figure out there. So, yeah. And then it was moved to Disneyland from there. And it is to describe it briefly, it is a show where you sit down in a theater and you see a typical American family throughout the past century. So they talk about the new, it's all animatronics, and they talk about the new innovations of that time period. So you check in with them at like 1920s, 1940s, 1960s, and then there's a modern thing where people are with in the not too distant future. But what's interesting is the seats are in a large ring around a central stage, and the ring with all the seats in it is actually what circumnavigates the stage in the center. So it's it's the theater that's moving around the stage itself.
Thus the carousel.
Yeah, thus the carousel. It's actually the longest running stage show in the history of American theater. The Carousel of Progress. Yeah, it's fascinating. They just recently updated they have to constantly update the future segment so it doesn't start to seem completely outdated. So they just revamped the clothes in that last scene to make them a little more modern.
I can tell you're as excited as me about the Maximum Fun Drive.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself, but I am, because I'm a professional, John.
Laura, we've been hearing a lot, even in the few weeks since we launched Sleeping with Celebrities, we've been hearing from listeners. I heard from somebody who said that they fell asleep and dreamed about being in their kitchen making bagels with Neil Gaiman. The Neil Gaiman episode has gathered a lot of attention from a lot of listeners. We even heard in actual sound from some of our listeners, including our listener Tina from Seattle.
I had terrible insomnia last night, and this very episode was the thing that finally escorted me to sleep. The best thing is that I didn't hear the whole thing. All I know about Neil Gaiman's process of something is that Kiefer is involved. Sometime after I heard John murmur, wheat, barley, I was down, I was gone. It's brilliant. The conspiratorial, sleepy voices of host and guest are the sweetest. Maybe someday I'll hear the whole thing. I would like to, but I don't know, man, not at night. I probably won't.
What I love about Max Fun is that I get to hear a great idea that if I instantly go, I get it, I love it, we can do that. But if I worked for a huge media conglomerate, what are the odds that they would say, oh, that sounds like a fantastic idea. Run with it.
If I may break character just a little bit from my soothing Sleeping with Celebrities voice, it's true. There aren't any organizations. There aren't any organizations beside Maximum Fun where I can say, I've got this idea where I bring on famous people and have them talk about uninteresting things. And then everybody in the network suddenly got excited about this idea. And then we made the show. This is the only place where this happens. This is one of the things that's special about Maximum Fun. And if you're listening to this show, you're probably of a similar stripe of mind as people around here. And I think that's a good reason for you to be supporting what we do. If I may break character just a little bit from my soothing Sleeping with Celebrities voice, it's true. There aren't any organizations. There aren't any organizations beside Maximum Fun where I can say, I've got this idea where I bring on famous people and have them talk about uninteresting things. And then everybody in the network suddenly got excited about this idea. And then we made the show. This is the only place where this happens. This is one of the things that's special about Maximum Fun. And if you're listening to this show, you're probably of a similar stripe of mind as people around here. And I think that's a good reason for you to be supporting what we do.
We rely on listeners.
And that's why we're coming to you now. So before you fall asleep, just on your phone, maybe as you're lying in bed, you know, it's not good to spend a lot of time on your phone before bed, but for right now, it's okay. You go to MaximumFun.org/join, and you'll sleep better knowing that you became a member of Sleeping with Celebrities. And now, back to our show. I asked Justin McElroy if the Carousel of Progress was one of the regular Disney World attractions he liked to visit on his family's trips. Here's what Justin had to say.
It's part of a class of what I would call, this is kind of a cute nickname I picked up from my wife and kids. It's boring rides. They're just boring ones that only I like. They make me feel nostalgic. Things like this is boring. Hall of Presidents, of course, is extremely boring.
Sure.
And that's one that I've only managed to talk them into once. Hall of Presidents is a tough sell.
What happens there?
Well, what happens there is you go into a large theater and you are presented with 46 dudes who are animatronic and they stand on stage and you get there's a little movie about how much America rules, and then the movie screen goes away and behind it you see the 46 presidents of the United States. In animatronic form, you hear some quotes from them, and that's the Hall of Presidents.
Are you in a car?
It's just a theater. There's no moving parts in this one. It's really just a show that you watch. I think the capacity is something like 700, but there'll usually be a good number of people in there, especially if it's a hot day. People, you know, there's no line to get into the Hall of Presidents. I love rides like that. I love, there's a ride at the Mexico Pavilion at Epcot in the World Showcase called the, it used to be just like a Mexico-themed boat, dark ride in a boat, and now it has been themed to the Three Caballeros with, you know, Donald Duck and
some other birds.
Yeah, some other birds. But everyone wanted to make that a Coco ride, but Coco came out just right after they revamped it, so I don't think they were in a rush to remodel the whole thing again.
I see. Do you remember what the lesser known presidents say in the Hall of Presidents, Tyler or Taylor?
Hilariously, I thought they all talked until I saw it for the very first time recently. And not all of them talk. Some of them, they just sort of like breeze over. They just sort of just pass right by your Polks and your Tylers. Not a lot of time spent on them. Okay. I will say that Andrew Jackson looks really cool. He looks like he's wearing this like white coat, and he looks like David Bowie. It's just like, I don't know, he just looks cool in the ride.
Which president talks the most?
Biden gets the longest. Whoever the current sitting president is sort of centered in the stage, and then they give like a little speech at the end. So that's the one that usually gets the most. The second to that is Abraham Lincoln has his own little bit.
Yeah. He gets a lot of attention.
Yeah, he really does, which I mean, it makes sense.
He was a good one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been to Disneyland in California because I'm from the West Coast, but now I live in the upper Midwest. I live in Minnesota, where we have the state fair. Mm-hmm. And everyone in my family has developed a circuit that they need to do at the fair for the fair to become a fully realized experience.
Okay.
So for me, I need to see the crop art because my wife and my daughters enter the crop art competition regularly, where you make art out of the native crops of Minnesota.
So is this like a making a small scale piece using crops as like materials, or this is like patterns you've drawn into crops, like crop circles?
I can see, Justin, how it could be confusing. The crop artists who compete, like my wife, use the crops themselves to make the art. It's the materials. Mm-hmm. It's art that can be hung on a wall.
Gotcha.
Or even placed in a gallery if it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about seeds, flax, rye, wheat, barley,
yeah,
corn, soybeans. Yep. Navy or lima or kidney, various field beans,
mm-hmm,
pinto beans, field peas, millets,
mm-hmm,
common buckwheat, safflower, sorghum,
mm-hmm,
sugar beet, Sudan grass, wild grasses,
mm-hmm,
various common forage grasses like timothy, bluegrass, born grass, clovers, lentils. My wife has been doing this for a long time, and she can take months to work on a piece to then hang at the state fair.
You should tell her about pumpkin seeds. They're big.
Another attraction on my list of attractions at the Minnesota State Fair is the Dairy Barn. And Justin, this is a really special place to me,
mm-hmm,
because it's where artists create sculptures of the dairy pageant princesses, the participants in the pageant. The pageant is known as the Princess K of the Milky Way pageant. And the sculptors will create sculptures of these young women out of enormous blocks of butter.
God, I'm glad that happens. I'm really just glad that exists.
As am I. Butter art is really one of the best things to observe the final product or observe the sculpting. You know, Minnesota is known for the number of lakes that we have, but we also have some of the finest butter sculptors in the upper Midwest. Arguably, they may be even more impressive than the butter cow sculptors known in Iowa. You don't want to get me started on the Iowa State Fair, because this is a family-friendly show. Anyway, I go to the Dairy Barn, and I always get a malt at the Dairy Barn.
I love a malt. I love a malt.
A good malt. I go to the Miracle of Birth Center, where farm animals are being born, and then I regret going there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's an all-you-can-drink milk stand for $2, all the milk you can drink.
That I actually know that number. It's not so much. Not too much.
Not very much.
Not very much. Not as much as I used to, certainly.
What are the items in your circuit at Walt Disney World?
For me, there's a nightly fireworks show that I try to watch with the girls at least once. That's always really nice. We don't usually manage to do it in the parks proper, but you can see them from a long way away, and they pipe the music to, you know, all around the resort. So anywhere you can sort of see the fireworks, you can hear the soundtrack, which is a big part of the effect. I really like riding. There's this terrible ride called Journey into Your Imagination, starring Eric Idle and Figment, and who's a little purple dragon, and it's been around since almost the inception of Epcot, not quite, but it's a ride about how incredible your imagination is, and they've remodeled it since the original version that I went to as a kid, but I have enough fond memories of that version that I still subject myself to the new version every year. I'm not sure what that says about me. Probably something. I like, after my kids have gone to sleep, sometimes my wife and I will, like, some of the rooms have these very tiny balconies. There's just enough room for like two chairs, and we'll sit out there and listen to people and music while our kids are sleeping. You know, quiet moments like that that let me sort of recharge a little bit. It's always satisfying to have a big win, get a big dining reservation at the last minute, things like that are always very gratifying. And I also like buying, there's a line of snacks made by Goofy. It's like generic Disney World type snacks. And I like buying some, like, you know, you ever have the popcorn that's like multiple colors? Like, I think they call it confetti popcorn. I love to have some confetti popcorn there. I'm wild about that stuff.
What do you think it says about you that you like the confetti popcorn?
That I am someone who likes to stop and savor experiences, because if you throw a big handful of the confetti popcorn in your mouth, if it's the good stuff that's different flavors, it's just going to be a mishmash. But if you take the time to really enjoy each piece, you get a whole different range of flavors. Not like Fruit Loops. You know, Fruit Loops are all the same flavor. That was a hard one.
Do you think you're a good father?
I think that if you compare me to the average dad, I am probably above the average of parent. But a lot of that is really my situation. I'm fortunate enough that I'm able to work out of my home, which allows me a lot of time to spend with my kids. And I'm a big believer that that is the number one thing to do for children, is just to be with them. So in that sense, I feel like I am. But from the metric of my own, you know, the standards I hold myself to, I feel like I fail those pretty regularly. So I don't know if that's not really an answer, I guess.
It is. How important is proper footwear when going to a Disney park?
It is absolutely essential. It has to be something that has good arch support, if that's a concern for you. And I feel like you have to have socks. And this is not the day to break in a new pair of shoes. No one cares how you look at Disney World. I mean, truly nobody. Because no one wants you to go in there and raise the standard of clothing, right? To where they all feel self-conscious about themselves. They want to have fine table dining while they're wearing a Big Johnson t-shirt and, you know, jams. But comfortable footwear is very, very key. Sunscreen is massive. You don't want to go in day one. And I mean, I endorse this for everybody all the time, but, you know, make sure you hit the sunscreen, because it gets brutal down there. The other thing I'd recommend too, just on that front, I buy a like 10 pack of ponchos off Amazon, and I have them like, or wherever, and I have them shipped ahead to the place that we're staying, because if the rain picks up, all of a sudden, you know, all the stores reach underneath their counter and pull out the big, like, you know, tiny threadbare ponchos for $20 that you can buy. So I just throw a few in the backpack, and you end up, you know, you got one on hand, you're ready for the rain if it comes, and you didn't have to spend, you know, $40 to get some disposable ponchos for your family. So That's a tip that I always try to recommend to people.
When you arrive at your hotel room, have they placed them in the room, or do you need to go to the front desk and ask if any ponchos have been delivered?
If you get to there and you want it brought to your room, you are going to pay a fee to have them bring your box of ponchos. So that you're starting to eat in on your profits from pre-ordering your ponchos. So I would recommend making your own way down to the front desk and say, excuse me, do you have any Amazon boxes that have been delivered? And then just a brief 3 hours later, they'll be back with your specific Amazon package.
Justin, I'd like to ask you for your top 5 tips for visiting Disney World, but I need to clarify something rather important. Mm-hmm. The theme park is actually called Walt Disney World.
That's 100% true. Roy, who was Walt's brother, who really is he is the one that made Disney World, Walt Disney World happen.
Right.
And Disney passed away, obviously, before the park opened. So Roy wanted to insist on calling the park Walt Disney World so that people would always know, you know, help to craft even more of a legacy.
About his brother.
His brother, yeah. There has been talk before that might change at some point. I don't think the world is in any danger of forgetting Walt Disney. Maybe we don't need to call this Walt Disney World. Maybe it could just be Disney World. I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people will have some very strong feelings about it, no doubt.
Besides having ponchos delivered, what are your other 4 main tips for Disney World travel?
I wouldn't make more than 1 reservation for dining in a day. I think that you could spend too much time, despite what I've said already, I think you can spend too much time in the whole sit down eating thing. So I would stick to 1 dining reservation. A big one for me is anyone who's traveling, and this is really to relieve some of my stress as a planner, anyone who might be traveling with us, sometimes I'm the planner for we've gone with my brothers and their family, and that starts to balloon out to, you know, 20 people or whatever, and trying to plan for that kind of group is rough. So I'd like to ask everybody what their number one experience they want to have is. And then I find that if you plan that way, where, you know, you start there and try to prioritize everyone's number one experience, then you start to realize maybe that no one really wanted to go on Jungle Cruise. You know, maybe you didn't need to spend 70 minutes in line for Jungle Cruise. And you got to watch out. Sometimes you think those old rides are going to be the quick lines, but there's rides like Peter Pan's Flight, which is, in my opinion, not that great. It's a suspended dark ride. But it's charming, but you'll usually end up waiting 65, 70 minutes for it. And it's because the capacity is so much lower on that ride. It's much older, and the capacity is slower, so they can't get as many people through. In my opinion, that one's not really worth it. I feel the same way about Jungle Cruise. I don't want to stand out in the sun for 20 minutes to have, a college student bark bad puns at me. I'm good. I have TikTok.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So finding 1 priority for each person, I think is really good. I mean, hydration is obvious, but it's huge. I tend to tell people to avoid going to Magic Kingdom on Monday. I don't know why this is, but it is famously much busier at Magic Kingdom on a Monday.
I would have thought Saturday.
I think that's people who are beginning a week-long trip, and they start at the most popular park, which happens to be Magic Kingdom. So I tried to avoid Magic Kingdom on a Monday.
By hydration, you mean water, right?
I do. I think water is really important. To drink a lot of water is key.
All right. That's good advice.
Also, there are some rides that are better at night. Some of the exterior roller coasters, I'm thinking specifically here of things like Expedition Everest over in the Animal Kingdom or Big Thunder Mountain Railroad at the Magic Kingdom. Those are really beautiful at night, so it can be worth tracking down my kids and I sometimes watch ride videos, which is like a first person perspective of being on the ride. And then sure. I'll put them into a laundry basket and try to emulate the movements that they're seeing on TV. We used to do like quarantine Disney days where we would try to replicate, like I have a Mickey shaped waffle maker and I would make the kids like Mickey shaped waffles. And then there's a cookie chase during the holidays where in Epcot, where you go to the different nations that are represented in the World Showcase, there are these pavilions and like there's a Germany pavilion and there's a Morocco pavilion and there's a Mexico pavilion. And there are different holiday treats. And one of the things you can do is a cookie chase where you go to like buy five different cookies all over the world. And then the bonus, if you get all five of those cookies and they stamp your little passport, the prize you get is another cookie, the last thing that you feel like at that point. But we replicated the cookie chase with my wife and I running from room to room and putting on regional garb, whatever was appropriate for us. We didn't want to get too far out of our lane. So there's a lot of like time in Norway and Germany and what have you. But then, you know, we would have Oreos or whatever cookies that we had in the house when we tried to replicate the Disney experience that way.
Justin, you've really demystified the Disney World family vacation for me. I imagine that at the end of a full day of rides at Walt Disney World and after watching the last of the park's fireworks display, I can imagine you find yourself ready to just crawl into bed and place your head on a cubed pillow.
Oh, John, you know I travel with the cube pillow. I found the perfect pillow. I'm never letting it out of my sight.
Thank you for sleeping with us, and as always, good night.
Good night, John.
Well, sleepyheads, I hope you enjoyed learning about visiting Walt Disney World as much as I did. One thing I like to do at the end of my day is make a mental catalog of things I experienced and or learned. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to make a list out loud here of some of the takeaways from my conversation with Justin while they're still fresh in my mind. Dinner reservations are an almost problematically big deal in these parks. There is a right Orlando airport and a wrong Orlando airport. Condolences to those working at the wrong one. That can't be easy. For some reason, the busiest day of the week at the Magic Kingdom isn't Saturday, but Monday. No one can explain this. Walt Disney World is no place for fancy attire. Save your fine linens for SeaWorld. And it rains a lot in Florida, so order a bunch of ponchos to be delivered to your hotel. You don't want to buy ponchos at the park. Okay, I'm going to turn in myself. Thank you for sleeping with me and with Justin McElroy. And if you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join Sleeping with Celebrities here during our annual Max Fun Drive. Our show, like all the shows on the Maximum Fun Network, operates through a listener-supported model, a public radio-style model. The only way this program can exist is if people become members, if people donate, if people help us, if people support the show that they're listening to. If you're enjoying our program, and I think you probably are, now is the time to become a member so that we can keep it going. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. To become a member. It won't take long. We have many wonderful thank you gifts to offer you, some of them quite silly, all of them delightful. MaximumFun.org/join. You can follow Sleeping with Celebrities on Twitter and TikTok under the handle Sleep with Celebs. Our Instagram handle is Sleep W Celebs. Our email is sleepwithcelebs@maximumfun.org. This program was senior produced and edited by Laura Swisher. Swish. We get social media assistance from Charlie Moe. Our music was made by the Winterbowers. This is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Night night.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.